Welcome to Share Talk, the only podcast where investors come first.
Hello and welcome to Share Talk. It's the Share Talk show, which is an end of week review, new week preview. I'm joined this week by Phil, by Kevin, by Albert. How are you today, Phil? Phil's the guy I know the best, Phil Coral. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Zach. Pleasure to be here.
Have you had a good week in the markets?
Yeah, it's been a good week for me this week. There's been some movers. There's been a few that have just sat and consolidated, but all in all, very pleased this week.
Any highlights for you?
Yeah, Forbes has been a good one on Aquis. They're a litigation securitization company who've really been undervalued. And there's been a deal in the pipeline, which is just basically come off or going to come off. The latest RNS stated that the news would be there here this week. We're hoping that's all been done. And obviously it's moved the share price up from the sort of 0.685 region into the two pence. So 300% up on the original investment from Monday. So it's been a good week.
So I hear they're going to be the new Syme, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, people say this, but I'm not convinced that they're going to be on a level of Syme are in terms of their model, but it's a slightly different mechanism. They use litigation funding as opposed to securitization of inventory. So I think the model needs to be proven beforehand. But I'm hoping for good things there. I'm hoping for around about 6 pence exit.
Right. We go on to Albert Arthur, who I've known from, I suppose, the Eurasia Times, which obviously says quite a lot in terms of both Eurasia and Albert as well. Albert, I think you were a sort of early holder of that. Is that right?
Yes, I bought that a while ago in 2016, and it was about 0.036 of a pence. And originally, when I first bought it, I thought, have I invested in a pile of mud in Russia? And I just left it on the back burner. Sometimes it's good to get a little spread around early when people aren't buying things. And when it relisted...
Right, so basically Eurasia is now a £1 billion pile of mud in Russia rather than a 0.36 or whatever it is.
It's a unicorn out there, but I mean, the demand for it, I mean, it's going to do really well.
I mean, I think the question is, how do you manage it? Well, you got in there and you just, you ignored it, let's say. But how do you manage just to stay in there and not, like, take a profit at 5p, 10p, 15p?
Because when I buy something, I buy it. And I review the target, but I only see the loss as the initial investment. So sometimes you just get the balls, you go for the big one. And then it depending on what else is around in the market, you have to think, well, where can I reposition that money? Where can I put that money? You know, then leave it in there. I did that with EUA, and then luckily it was suspended during the COVID crash. And then it bounced back afterwards and rocketed off into the distance. But then the timing was perfect because there was a lot of COVID opportunity. I think NCYT was bubbling off at that point, and COVID was becoming not so much like a little thing that was going to come and go away. It was going to be here for a while. And then Novacyt started, and then I started taking some positions in. I think there was ODX was at 10p, I think 8p when I first saw it. I got 10p in that one. There were the EUA profits. I went into the ODX and ABCP. That was one where I needed approval from work. It was 14 pence. And because the market opens at 8 o'clock in the morning, people that do my approvals get in at 9. By the time they'd got in to approve it, it was like 11, it was 40p. I was devastated, but greed, don't let the greed get you. I did well out of both. 10 bagged ODX went up to about £1.10 maximum.
Yeah.
Generally, I like an investment, not a trade. But I mean, if you get 10 bags, you have to start thinking it's a slice or sell time. Because, when it eats up there.
All right, our final guest today is Kevin Hornsby. How are you today, Kevin?
I'm very well, Zach. I'm just arrived back from the desert of Egypt, and I'm sitting in my room now thinking this week wasn't particularly wonderful, but such is life.
From what I see, you're quite an active trader. You're going, I've seen you get into stuff. I'm not sure I've seen you get out of much stuff, but you're sort of hoovering up ideas and stocks all the time. Is trading and investing full time for you?
No, not really, but I do spend a fair amount of time doing it. I teach here in Egypt, so I'm doing it outside of those parameters, if you like. I'm new to it in a way. I started 12 months ago, roughly, and I wasn't doing very well. I had a pot of about £100,000 12 months ago, and I was very sad because it was 400 a few months earlier. So it'd been disastrous. But as we speak now, I have 500,000. So it's done very well in the last 12 months. So this is good. Mainly, I have to say, I am the fanboy of Zoetech. I've owned it from HNR days, Highland Natural Resources. And then it suddenly came across a place to grow some hemp. And then the rest is not history yet because we've only just begun. But I think this is going to be a millionaire maker. I have realized over the last few months that I have to concentrate my investments. So I only have about 5 or 6 investments. And yes, I try to maximize the amount of money I put into each one. If I believe it, I'm conviction and I will go for it.
We've covered our guest a little bit for background, but the purpose of this is the stocks of the week. Can't resist talking about Futura Medical because I think that took even longer to grow than Eurasia. Is there an expert in the room who knows about Futura?
Well, I bought
this is Albert Arthur, by the way. He'll give you his address later on.
Yeah, it's a very interesting one.
And try and say it without saying the word growth or
growth. Or,
yeah. Have you been involved with the medical trials? This is what we want to know.
Well, this is the funny thing about the medical
trials. He looks like he has, actually.
Benjamin Butt? Are you getting younger as you get older?
So let me tell you about fun, though. And I was looking, originally went in, looking for the smallest cap stock pending FDA approval. That was the aim of the game. And so this query would tell me anything that's had a news article that said FDA in it, and then not subsequently have the word approval in a later RNS. And FUM came out, and you're looking at the cap, and I think cap was probably 30 million back then. And I thought, I like this, what is it? So I got in, and I started doing the research, and I watched some videos, and I thought, this is erectile dysfunction. I mean, now when you start thinking about demand and supply and marketing, and you think that, well, how do you appeal to everyone? We're on this earth fornicating. And this product it assists in that process. Not only do guys want to buy it, but the females that want the fella to buy it, they buy it for them. So there's going to be a demand for this product. And that was what perked me up. Not only that, the banter on some of the threads. I mean, on the chat today, someone called, wife changing, stuff like that. It's nice to have a stock that's not so serious, that you've put someone in, 5 or 10 grand, and even if it goes, a bit of a punt, it's a fun investment. It's something. But the thing is, it's got that exposure to America as well. It's not just the UK. So I bought it, no approval. And going back to trials, what you mentioned earlier, this is where it gets really interesting because they did placebo trial and it didn't meet its endpoints. Now, if you're getting paid to have sex, you're just going to say, yes, it's good. You get paid to have sex. So in the trials, the previous trials were placebo. Now, what is key is the efficacy on the non-placebos. So they're going into what you call an open label study, a very small one, 10 times smaller than the last trial. And that is to get approval via the FDA. It's just efficacy now. They know it's safe. There's no harm caused. So it's going into efficacy trials on a tiny number of people through the FDA. And if it gets the FDA, you've got a Viagra replacement. And when I was saying I took a Viagra, I actually took one. And you'd have veins popping out the side of my head. It didn't do anything downstairs, but it made me feel comfortable. I mean, you can replace this with a lovely little gel. And the market cap there was tiny. And then when the news came in, I mean, not only is it fun to look at the chats and see the banter in there, but I mean, did 170% today. So, I mean, I was straight down the shop, getting myself a bottle of Paul Roger.
You seem quite inspired by the company. Are you going to be a long-term holder?
I'm not a trader. Well, everything's a trade, depending on how long you hold it. I see myself as an investor. I dissect a bot. I've got algorithms. I strip everything to pieces. And I have an idea. And things are punts. I mean, you buy a punt. And it might not have got a partner. They recently partnered up for a 50-50 commission basis. They don't. They got millions. They could place to do this, but they got a partner. Then after that CE mark, after that, what's going to come next? FDA. It's a $5 billion market, potential Viagra replacement. So for me, this is a really exciting, and had a great big squeeze into the afternoon. And that's why I've had a great week. I mean, fun has done it for me. I sent a tweet out earlier, and I never thought I'd say I'm really happy to be invested in the erectile dysfunction sector, you know.
And do you think this is going to be the Viagra? I mean, is that going to be the Viagra of the 2020s?
There's a potential for it. There's a potential for it. And a key thing is you don't need to go to the, you don't need prescription. You don't need that embarrassing moment. You just Amazon Prime.
The highlights of the week, gents. I mean, from Phil.
I mean, big highlight for me is a long-term investor in World High Life, or now Love Hemp as it is. It was the news landed that they've just secured a 5-year sponsorship deal with the UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship. If you know anything about the UFC, you'll probably know that they have one of the biggest fan bases in the world. They've over 900 million fans. They're beamed into, the fights are beamed into about 160 different countries. So the market there is, you know, phenomenal. It's huge. And I think that this basically, this news will help the company, you know, start their global launch. And it'll give them really good leverage into the North American market to grow from there. So for me, the one to watch, massively undervalued with around a 30 million market cap, revenues of around 6 million. Star buy for me of 2021 is Love Hemp.
That's the thing. I mean, I've interviewed the cannabis plays. I think twice Zoetic, or two or three times Zoetic, and a couple of times Love Hemp as well. And I think that for me, if I didn't know the different market caps, I'd be thinking that Love Hemp was the bigger company. It just seems to be that they've got, you know, they're with Boots and they're with Ocado and Holland & Barrett. And you just sort of think, you know, wow. I mean, obviously, it's certainly in the UK. If people are going for Zoetic, they should be going for Love Hemp in the same way. Is that right, Phil?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to compare them because it's like apples and oranges. You've got Zoetic have got, you know, the cessation. They've got their smokables, which is obviously a completely different market than the focus of CBDs and edibles that you know, Love Hemp have. And again, we know that Zoetic have got those too. But I think the real key point about Zoetic is they've got the smokable products and the chill brand. Love Hemp, on the other hand, have got a stunning product with the CBD oils. And they have already rolled that out in the UK, and they have become pretty much the biggest brand in the UK. So what they're trying to do now is the next step is to roll out into the North America and use the same model that they've used here with the same products. And obviously, by getting the UFC on board, they've already had GSP, George St. Pierre, who's had two titles. He's one of the most respected fighters, a retired fighter now, and he's been the brand ambassador for the last 6 months. So, you know, you go on, he's got a 3 million audience on Instagram. So, yeah. You know, you can put the product out there, but you know, with the right distribution deals in the US, I feel that they can capture some of the burgeoning market. And I believe that by the year 2025, the global market for CBD is going to be somewhere in the region of $15 billion. So if we can, you know, if the company can get 1 or 2% of those global figures, then, you know, it's going to put them into the £1 billion market cap, which is where they ought to be. So, yeah, I think there's a long way to go. I mean, looking at the latest UK companies that have recently launched, as we know, companies like Cellular Goods, Canabo, MXC or MGC Pharma, that have listed with a market cap of anywhere from 50 million and gone up to 100 million with little and scant details of profits and any sort of revenue figures, then 30 million market cap for a company with the with the revenues that they've got, an absolute steal, really. So the main reason I think it hasn't moved is because it's on the Aquis exchange. As we all know, it's very liquid. But if we can generate more volume, then it will move. And there's talk of basically a move to the CSE market, the Canadian Securities Exchange. And hopefully that will be done in this year. And then at least we can then start to entice the investors from the North American market and Canada, which is originally was a Canadian company, World High Life. And then they can actually start to put these guys on the map because they thoroughly deserve it.
The three of you got a lot of expertise, and I think you can hopefully rattle off my questions quite quickly. The Aquis Exchange, is that a winner now? Is that going to be the new AIM? Is it going to be the new NASDAQ, as I said? They're trying to G them up and everything else. Is it going to get there?
So yeah. The problem with it is a lot of the stocks on there are growth companies, not even nano cap. They're like, you know, 800,000 market cap. So they're very liquid, a lot of the companies, and the shares, not many shares in issue. So until the Aquis Exchange, can actually set up a proper electronic order system where you can get real-time live quotes, then no, it won't do anything. Until we see something there, you know, it has to improve. And there's a lot of brokers who will not accept any dealings with them. So Halifax, Barclays will entertain some of them, but obviously not the CBD stocks. But there are certain brokers, I think IG is another one, which is obviously one of the biggest brokers in the UK. They will not deal with the Equis Exchange. Yeah, so until we get some proper access in the form of an electronic order system with the brokers, then it's not going to become a replacement for AIM. Now, I'm hopeful that in the next year or so that that will improve. And I know I've spoken to the CEO, Alistair Haynes, and I'm sure you know him, Zach. He's vehement that this will replace AIM, and he calls it the people's market. He's sick of seeing retail investors being shafted by the likes of AIM. And he really does want to entice the small companies away from the AIM exchange onto the Aquis exchange. So I'd like to see it. You know, I think there's some fantastic companies on there. We've got Coin, we've got Forbes, you know, we've got KR1, who've all, you know, these companies that have done 300-400% in the last month or so. So there's some decent growth companies. Samarkand is one that's just listed, which is a kind of a mini hook group. So, you know, there's real potential there. Don't ask Arthur too much about his Coin investment. We won't go there on that one, but
happy 10 bagger situation, or?
I bought Coin in 2016 for 7p. I sold it in November 2020 for 2p. Yes.
So you broke your normal rule of staying there till the bitter end.
Yeah, back then it was the next, and for me, I haven't got any fundamental. I find it really hard to put it through my investment template, because to get the fundamentals, it's a lot harder. I mean, Coin have got an amazing bot. They're great. They are a great company. But I mean, I didn't realise that this Bitcoin was, I mean, it's ridiculous. I've just got Bloomberg on in the background talking about it being part of your portfolio. Like this time last year, you would have never expected, you know, Musk.
The only thing is with that is that, let's say if I would have been in your position, which I wish I had been, I bought at 7p, and, you know, it's a company I'd known for 3 or 4 years, you know, before they were famous and everything else, let's say. It was almost like hardly worth bothering getting out. I mean, it was a bit like that. So it's surprising that you were diligent enough to actually pick up the phone and go.
Yeah, I know. And I kicked myself. And you know what I did with the money? I tried to bag it. I tried to do 100% quick trade on Gun. And then I just cashed it. You watch the documentary about Warren Buffett. He does say never sell at a loss, and it's a really good thing. It's on Amazon. For me, it's very binary. Like, you look at ARB, it tails Bitcoin. I like the fundamentals of a company. They're gonna, you know, I mean, I know there is fundamentals there because if they're mining coins and, you know, it's higher value, they're going to make more money out of it. But the way it tails is just very binary. And I traded it on IG, I was trading all the coins. And I was waking up at 3 a.m. to do a trade, and it wasn't healthy. So I thought, get rid of more. Yeah. Now I wish, like you, Zach, ARB, I was tipped at 7p on that, and I quoted, I could have really made some money on that.
Girls
get away, don't they? Really?
The
whole Bitcoin thing is bizarre. It's an asset that's backed by nothing. That takes a lot of electricity to mine an asset that somebody created out of nothing. And now it's worth $60,000 a coin. I don't get it. I don't get the fundamentals of it.
So the way the world works in banking, right? Because I work in banking I'm not a banker, but I write the code to make the bank work. Generally in the background, you have what's called a relational database, and it's all data related in a database, and it's expensive, it's transactions, it uses gigabits of storage on a server. Now, what this is the key thing with Bitcoin, I'm transferring you some money, you're going to transfer it to Phil, Phil's going to transfer it to Zach. That's 4 times the amount of storage if you're in a different bank. Now, what people like, and JP Morgan, they've shown attraction to it, is a distributed ledger. Because what a distributed ledger means is, for all of us, we have one source and we all tap to that source of data. There's not 4 relational databases. JP Morgan moved trillions of thousands of dollars around a day. Right? So you imagine the relational databases involved and the processes. If you could have a distribute ledger that just said, that's how much money you've got in your bank, and you all tapped into it, there's none of this. Even if JP Morgan, they can do internal transactions with it. They can have one source that all of their other relational databases feed to. So that is what people love about blockchain. That's the key thing. What they
is it like the difference between writing everything a list on a piece of paper and writing and typing everything into a spreadsheet? Is it that much of a leap? Is it that kind of a leap?
It's kind of like writing stuff on a piece of paper to write it on a piece of paper again, to then write it on a piece of paper again.
Yeah.
Whereas every transaction is
recorded.
You have one piece of paper, problem solved. That's kind of how you, that's the easiest analogy of how to see blockchain.
But I'm not arguing about the blockchain itself, okay? Because I see the use of blockchain.
Yeah.
But what I'm suggesting is that if we take Bitcoin as an example, one man originated this, said there would be, is it 24 million coins? 21 million coins. And then purely because of scarcity, now the value of this goes to $60,000 a coin. For me, this is bizarre.
So I think I can try and answer some of that. Why? So let's just wind back to previous. And again, you can't apply this model because we're in a complete, you know, this is a, we've never been in this situation where we've got, we're on the cusp of a market rollover and we've got a world pandemic happening at the same time. So this is pretty much like, you know, in uncharted territory. Normally, when you get a hedge against inflation, people turn to precious metals like gold, silver, platinum, palladium, whatever, you know, whatever they take to find it. But generally gold and silver become that hedge against inflation. People are understanding that buying gold and silver physical now is not an easy thing to do. Storage, safety aspects, and the fact that you try and put an order in for silver and gold now and you can't get it for love nor money. You know, the wait time has gone from 2 weeks for a kilogram bar of silver, to 3-4 months, it's stepped out. So I think what's happening is they're looking for an alternative mechanism or commodity to put into, and that has become Bitcoin. I genuinely think that because it's so easy to buy now in the likes of Mode, you know, Revolut, a lot of these challenger banks, you can just deposit some money, 500 quid, hit the conversion button, you've bought your Bitcoin. All the coins, Ethereum, you know, whichever coin takes your fancy. So I think that's what it's become, Kevin. It's become the new gold and silver asset in this world as a hedge. That's my thoughts on it anyway. But also is the fact we've just had a halvening or a halving where the amount of Bitcoin that can be mined has been reduced in half effectively. So, you know, they release a set amount of Bitcoins every day and that number is halved. So that's driven. I mean, if you look at the historics, the graph of Bitcoin for the last, I think every 4 years, I think it is, that's added to the value because there's less coins to be mined. Therefore, the value of the coins goes up.
It takes longer to mine the coins, the longer it goes. So
the algos change.
Yeah, the last Bitcoin might not be mined till 2050 or 2060. This is what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And by then, maybe a Bitcoin is worth $20 million by that stage because it takes so much to mine.
Yeah, because it's...
But back to the fundamentals, what's backing a Bitcoin? It's like...
Yeah,
it's
you're absolutely like, right.
Whoever has Bitcoin must have more faith than all the religions in the world.
They have more faith in Bitcoin now than they do the US dollar and all the other fiat currencies. And that's, again, is another factor that's driving it. So it's becoming, I mean, the fact that, I mean, Elon Musk is driving it. The fact that he said he's invested $1.5 billion into Bitcoin and he's accepting it as a form of payment for his vehicles. Understood. That's driven, obviously, that, I mean, if you look at the value, when he said that, I think it was around the 25,000-30,000 mark. So he's added probably 50% of the recent gains have been added by Elon Musk. India have just recently said that they're not going to allow trading in it and it's going to become illegal to hold any Bitcoin. And that has knocked it back a bit because India was one of the countries where it was traded most for frequently. So India knocking it has had a bit of an impact on the recent, certainly the short-term price. But the other thing, I mean, just to answer it, I mean, we talked about Nifty's last week, NFTs, non-fungible tokens, and that's what's driven coins value. I think Albert was talking earlier on about the coin value has gone through the roof, and no, he does. You know, maybe we don't understand why. Well, their
it's
last
OTC as well, isn't it? Now it's on the OTC. That was a sneaky little listing. I didn't realize.
Yeah, Yeah, that it was listed on there, exactly. And they've just set up this NFT studio in Gibraltar or somewhere like that, certainly on in the south of in southern Spain. And again, this back to your question, what gives it the value? Well, something crazy happened last week. You probably saw that a piece of digital art sold for $60 million or £60 million.
Yeah, now, I saw that.
This is just digital art. You can't hold it. It's not tangible. It's a, you know, it's a bitmap file, effectively. So if there's market for it, then people will buy it.
Yeah, also, like what you were saying about, you know, like gold and, you know, people are in the crash. And, I mean, why buy gold when you can buy something that's going to go up six times quicker, you know? Yeah. And once you know it's coming, there's a lot of algo trading on it. It's not the type of algo I'd use, but it's like technical. They kind of predict, and the more buying it, demand, and like you say, in the shorter amount of stock in it is pushing it up. And now, and it's new, it's tech, it's like a change.
Yeah, it's current.
It's not like Musk. You can go to space.
Yeah, I get why it's happening. I really do get why it's happening. But I still don't get it.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. It's not a physical value. You know, the thing is that everybody sees money as a physical value, but money really isn't a physical value. When you spend it, it ends up as a digital value in a bank, and then you can convert that to cash. It's the same, really, because you can convert the Bitcoin to cash. But because it's drilled into us that you've got a pound coin or a 50p, it's a physical value. Really, it's in a database. It isn't physical. Money isn't actually physical. All it is a transaction. Money is a transaction, and coin is also a transaction. So this weird. And
this is one of the reasons why now I feel like I'm heavily into supply me capital, because of the blockchain, and because effectively it's just a system that's going to translate money from banks to companies so that they can have more cash flow, and the middleman is going to get a nice cut, and it should be a money printing machine. It should just be in, out, in, out, in, out. Thank you. 2%, 1%. It's going to be crazy.
It's a brilliant idea as well, because, I mean, the way I explained it was the simplest way that I could explain supply me would be during COVID and lockdown, people aren't driving the cars. So if you've got like an 18-inch Michelin tyre that's worth £250, it's still a tyre worth £250. But that company can't do anything with that stock, but they could capitalize on it if they needed working capital and then take that little percentage back. But the tire is still going to be there. People are going to drive, they're going to need tires, the demand will come back. So it's a nice way of helping a company. This is how I understood it, without that company doing placing shares, which is good for investors.
The news this week where SYME now are going to use Well, Supply Me Capital are now going to use the stuff on the go as well. So in other words, it can monetize stuff that's being sent all around the world. This is going to be absolutely astronomical, I think. It's going to be huge, because so much stuff is moving around the world and not being paid for until it arrives, which causes huge risks. So you've got the insurance company that can make profit for SYME. And you've got the monetization, even if it's not as big a percentage because it's only a short time. But even so, it's like, for me, the market is just, it is what, it, to me, it's the definition of a money printing machine. Money in, I'll take a bit of that, money out. Yeah. And keeps coming.
I just want to make one point there, actually. I mean, one of the points, one of the purposes of these extended chats, which some people may or may not like, is that I tend to find that investors are much better, or traders are much better at describing companies than the management of those companies. It's just, it's like I can listen to Alessandro for hours, and I, you know, I hear what he says and everything else, but at the end of the day, Kevin has just described the company far better than Alessandro. I mean, like, why is that? Obviously, it's a different skill that you're either, you know, you're a manager.
I think part of that, unfortunately, Zach, is the fact that he's got a quite a very limited vocabulary for English. So And that's no disrespect to Alessandro. I speak to him quite frequently. But I think what he needs to do is he needs to put forward somebody else, you know, in his company, whether that be Dominic or even Anthony Brown, someone, you know, from the US, to actually put forward the, you know, simplified model of what, you know, what inventory monetization or securitization actually involves, with a very simplistic, like a flowchart almost, of you know, this company, you buy that amount of their stock, whether it be a wine or whatever, they're a restaurant, you give them that money, they take the money, they invest it, whether it be for, you know, working capital or to marketing. Mm-hmm. And then whenever they want that stock back or to buy that wine back, because they need 10 bottles or 10 boxes, then obviously they give you that money back. And really the way they make the money is, and it's not really well communicated, is through the due diligence process that they run on these companies, which can, you know, when they onboard a company, they spend about a month, you know, researching and thrashing out the details. They took on board a guy called Stuart Nelson, who's got a very good background in this whole, I mean, you know, I think he's an ex-JP Morgan or something like that. And he basically, he's the man who checks out the companies and does all the due diligence, hammers it out, thrashes it out, and then they onboard them. So they get the fee for the due diligence, and then they get a cut on the, you know, on the actual monetization process itself. So as Kev says, it's a money printing machine, you know, cash in, process out. The model's superb. What we need to see from Alessandro, and I keep saying this, is we need the first issuance of the Storm Harbor companies in the UK. That's what people are waiting for, investors are waiting for with bated breath. Until we see that official RNS out there, I can't see any real kind of movement in the SP. I mean, it's frustrating because the guy promised it, or not promised it, I hate those words, promise, never promised, but it was always muted to go out around about the end of September of last year. And then it was October, and then it slipped. And obviously then they unfortunately they had the suspension. But yeah, and COVID has obviously played a big part in that. And I always say to these CEOs of these companies, never ever in your life put a self-imposed deadline on any sort of RNS or any.
That is a schoolboy error. I mean, when Supply Me was September, somebody said to me, and I can't remember who they were, they said that means June.
Yeah.
Next year. You know, so I'm still like, I mean, because it's March now, I'm still like, I'm quite cool and quite casual about it. Like, there's another 3 months to go and you'll get it over the line. Yeah. And it feels like it would be June because, you know, from the way he talks. But the you know, I would say 90% of the market in the small cap area.
Yeah.
Failure is due to a lack of communication.
Yeah.
And success can be nothing to do with actually what you've done on the ground or what you've found in the mine. You can have communication success and nothing else, like a SPAC.
Yeah.
Or you can have the opposite there. We have a great company and it's just trashed every time that the CEO opens their mouth. They trash the share price.
And they
either get interviewed by people who have no interest at all in financial markets or anything else to do with them, or they allow stuff to go out which they shouldn't allow to go out. It's like the Achilles heel. The communication side is the Achilles heel of these companies. And it was, I mean, actually, I remember with the best example of that is Argo Blockchain. I think the previous CEO, I interviewed him two or three times. I think that was a 2-year period when I interviewed him. And then Peter Wall came on. And I interviewed him once, and it's like within 5 seconds, I thought, this guy is really like, you know, it's like, wow, you know. And it's not a surprise at all that Argo is now Argo, because that man is, he's a communicator. You could sell ice to the Eskimos as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a great company. He does those video RNSs as well. Says, you know, hi, folks, I'm here just to explain the RNS, which came out 10 minutes ago. And it's all ad lib and ad hoc, and he's charming and everything else. And he's, you know, he does interviews with anyone and everyone. I mean, you know, literally anyone. He's a real communicator. Yeah. And I think it is, fortunately, the small cap space is probably 90%. You know, it's the Elon Musk. Tesla is 90% probably 99% communication. You know, it's amazing how absolutely. Much that difference makes. And so
I think you touched on it well there, Zach, that there's a phrase, and it's a bit cliched, under promise and over deliver. And I think that Alessandro has done the opposite. He's over promised and under delivered. Because, you know, by putting that date on there, and everyone is holding with a bated breath every single month or whenever it is for that RNS, for the first issuance and the first securitization of the companies. Mm. And it's just fallen by the wayside. And as soon as you do that, let's exceed it's, expectations.
Yeah, it's not just that as well. I mean, you got to think of what it attracts as well. But you have a lot of swing traders in it and a lot of news yeah. traders. Now, if you now news traders and swing traders kind of come together, they've stopped that price from moving 0.75 because there's so many technical targets on it that it would yeah. have gone over 1 pence by now. But because everyone has this target, they're all trying to get, they're buying it back and swinging yeah. the stock. So, I yeah. mean, until that solid news comes, it's in a cycle of 0.5 pence to 0.75 pence. You get a little bit of news, it goes up.
Yeah, yeah. It's every rise is sold into heavily, as you say. It's overtraded, that stock, unfortunately. I mean, I got in it back in the with Kevin back in at the 0.048 days when we watched it literally drop. You know, we watched it drop from about the 0.15 or you know, and not realized when it listed when it because it was an RTO into a company at the Arble Group, and obviously it dropped from like, I think it was peaked at 1.2 when it was with them and then it dropped. But the actual RTO price was effectively around the sort of 0.7, 0.8 mark. And it literally was sold heavily down through from March of last year through the start of the pandemic right down. And I don't know whether I think it was all down to this. Do you remember when they lent out to like 3 billion shares to those three funding companies and they were literally shorting, they were heavily short on the stock. Yeah. And they shorted it down and we were literally loading up. We were like, yeah, get in. That's when Kevin built up a, you know, extremely large position in it. And we rode it all the way up. You could see it turned. It just literally just flipped. And we rode it all the way up to that 0.75, 0.8 mark and obviously sliced heavily at that. And it, unfortunately, it's never, I mean, it's obviously been back up to the 0.68 highs into the sevens maybe, but then it's just sat around and the 0.5s, but yeah, you're right. It's heavily traded, and it's a shame because the company itself deserves so much more than that.
I held a big position. Well, not big. I held about around 10 million shares in it. And I think I got in at just over a tenth of a penny with my first investment. Yeah. And it went up to about 0.75. And then I held half. And when it kept spinning on the 0.75, and I know if it's going to keep spinning there and my money's invested, then I could do other things with that, you know,
for a
little while. But you never know when the news is going to that news is going to
happen. That's the risk, isn't it? You risk, you know, you could get out 90% of your position and then, you know, as you say, move. I mean, and you touched on it earlier on. I think that when you get those big rises and those big the big gains, it's amazing how much you only need one or two of those EUAs in your life to then start lumping big into the next big thing. And that's the beauty of the stock exchange, is that when you get the big winners, and Kevin knows this, he's pulled his portfolio back from, as he said earlier on, from your low hundreds or into the 90s back to half a mil, because he's been able to use those some of those SIMI, not that he's still got a massive position in SIMI, but he's been able to use some of those big position and big winners to lump big on the other, you know, stocks in his portfolio, which thankfully have done the same. So it's just amazing. When you start lumping big in, you see those big returns.
There's a lot of people coming in and out with the targets and trading, but I mean, supply, I mean, he's got potential to be a big one, hasn't it? So, I mean,
yeah. I mean, what are you, let's talk some targets on SIMI. What do we think it can do? I mean, you know, I'm thinking it could potentially do a 5 to 6 pence, something like that. What do you think?
I'd need to review it. I need to see it get past this 0.75p first. And I need substance for me, net profit margins, revenue.
Of course.
That speaks to me. So for me at the minute, I want to, technically, it's heavily traded. And with chartists and charting, I love it. It helps me get in and out of positions. But everybody has the same technical analysis, the same RSI. So, you know, it's all, and that's why things go up and down at certain peaks, because technically everyone's there and it's heavily technically. I mean, there's stuff in the pipeline, but you need that actual substance to get it over that point.
So absolutely.
You need to throw the bloody traders off the boat, basically, on the way up.
Definitely. Like,
that's what Fund did today. There's traders all over it. And they don't know where it's going to go. They don't buy it back. So,
I think I think it's likely to securitize somewhere in the region of, I know it's a big range, but 3 to 5 billion in 2021, based on what he's talked about. If we're assuming it's going to work, which I'm absolutely certain now it is, based on all the connections they've got. So 3 to 5 billion at 1%, which is lower than I think they will end up with, is I think somewhere in the region of 500 million. And let's take some of that off the off for profit. So you're talking 400 million with a PE of 30 or 40 at least for an improving company like that. I think we're talking 7 to 8 billion as a value. I don't know what the SP would be on that. It's a lot, but I think it's somewhere in the region of 15 to 20 pence. I think more likely it's going to be around 5 to 7p by the end of the year because people really don't believe it. But once the belief comes in, I think it'll be huge, huge.
I'm speechless after that, I have to say. I think it's an amazing call. From my charting perspective, I think it's going to be tough for it to break 0.7, you know, the old December peak. If it ever did that and did that, you know, with a little bit of sustain that area, I think it would go 0.7 to 1.2 within like days. I think you'd have a repeat of the August rally. I think that's what we could have. So it would just go straight from 0.7 to 1.2, 1.5. And I presume that would happen on that kind of the news that you're suggesting. Because so many people are saying it's not going to happen. And at the moment, the way it's moving, it's like we still don't really believe it. We're giving it the benefit of the doubt. We don't believe it. We can't believe it came back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it really is a wall of worry situation at the moment. Breaks 0.7, I think. Yeah. If it ever, it might not ever break 0.7, let's say, but the next time it does, it would just go mad. I think it would, because so many people would be caught short. You would have that kind
and,
of.
And there's also the FCA.
Yeah, I think if it breaks 0.75, you're looking at 3p.
Yeah, so it's going to be just an absolute, it's going to be like a
10 days.
It's like a Futura Medical. It's like, most people didn't think it was going to get anything. It's got something and it's gone mad. I mean, that kind of move. So when you genuinely surprise the market, or, you know, you wake up the market, you have that kind of view. We've spoken for a while now. Any stocks for you're following for next week, or any stocks that you think have done well this week or and may do well next week, etc. The good, the bad, the ugly, you know, whatever.
So for me, something on my radar at the moment is this, got quite a few things going on. And sometimes I find some because I see a storm forming that people don't understand. And I tell people don't listen. But Net Scientific, NSCI, this one here, PDSB have just got 60 million, right, by not the government, but it's kind of part of the government in Brazil. Brazil are really struggling at the moment. The cases there are crazy. Brazil strain. They've got PDSB, right, listed on the NASDAQ, trading around $5 at the moment. They've got 60 million investment. They're going in this first quarter, they're going into phase 1, 2 trials. You know, they do it in parallel for efficacy. So they know it's safe. They're going into efficacy. Now, NSCI has got I've done some analysis where I've ordered the shares outstanding and then the public float. They've got something like a 5% float. Do some analysis in the background. They've got they're in the top 15 of least shares outstanding. They've also got a 5% float. So if you order by tradable shares, they're one of the top hitters. Now, a lot of the market won't get it because a lot of the newbies investing think that price matters. Oh, it's 50p, that's a lot. But really, the market cap is tiny. They've got an investment in PDSB of 5.5%, and PDSB could do a Moderna cap. Their investment in PDSB, I'll say that it's a minimum 10 bagger, and it could do much, much more. If that vaccine gets approved and you're holding NSCI, it's going to go up, but the market just doesn't get it. I mean, I'm still buying more, you know, I'm taking positions.
I know, but the other thing is that you said, I mean, obviously the upside's great. If nothing happens, is NSCI, it's not going to go below 40.
Well, NSCI, I've watched it for a long time. I've been watching it for 4 months. There's not just a COVID vaccine involved. There's cancer. They've got cancer vaccine. They're like, you know what's coming in the future? We don't really get it yet, but it's like SCLP. They're working on cancer vaccines. Get vaccinated so you don't get certain types of cancers. And they're also working on a cancer vaccine as well. So it's not just that. I mean, you might. I just can't see if you're buying under 50p, I can't see you losing money because it's hovered around that zone for like the last 3 months. And, but I just don't think the market gets it. And it's very, it's not just rare in the sense they've got $60 million investment for a vaccine in Brazil. And with the way the world's going is, and what we've done in, specifically in this country as well, is we've missed gaps. We've got, we'll open up, the coronavirus will come back. We're going to need vaccines, and their vaccine is specifically affects longevity of, you know, whereas the ones currently, it's kind of like 3 months, you need a top up. This is one jab, long.
Isn't the future going to be we need a vaccine every like 2 months or every 3 months?
I think you'll have, when they nail it, when you've got like SCLP, they're targeting not just the S protein, which is the one that's, you know, when you get the, when it evolves, mutates. The S protein mutates, the N doesn't.
Yeah.
So with SCLP are targeting both proteins. So you've got Gen 1 vaccines now. It's like a sticky plaster. So you've got like all these vaccines out there that are like sticky plasters until they get a solid vaccine with, you know, targeted on like the longevity. So the way I saw it was not just are they going for this like long vaccine, it's on a 10 million cap and it's got no shares tradable, and they've got £60 million investment from, you know, the Brazilian government. And for me, it was just, even if I put 5 or 10 grand, put it on, because there's a chance you'll make millions off.
What market is it on, Albert?
It's on the AIM. It's not on the main market. But they're quite good with like RNS. They won't like let someone rip away without sending the speed into it. So it's on the AIM exchange. Have a look at it. But for me, it's one that I think I've said it's a minimum of a 10 bag. That's what I think. But like Zach says, what if they don't get anything? If they don't get anything, it'll probably stay where it is. Might crash out a bit, you know. I mean, it was way, I think it was 10 bags down from where it was before the vaccine initial announcement. So you might lose money if nothing happens, but
yeah,
be potential for a big one. So for me, I've been taking a position in that, and I'll probably take a bit more.
Any other highlights?
The ugly one, if we can just talk about that quickly, the ugly one for me was ORR, Oriel Resources. Sort of a bit of a negative RNS regarding I Am Gold, basically deciding not to bother spending the money or because of COVID delays. And yeah, the share price has probably dropped 30 or 40% at least because of it. I Am Gold is right next door in Senegal with a find. And surprise, surprise, they're delaying the issue with the other mine next door that Oriel own. And there's a joint venture on it. So this one has been ugly, dropped to 0.8 basically, but I've been buying them in a lot this week because I just can't see why it's happened. It's crazy, especially with the results coming in Cameroon very shortly. And they even found another mine in Egypt that basically didn't exist or wasn't on the radar until this week. And that's probably worth $1 million straight away. So market cap 12.5 million is ridiculous. It was ridiculous last November at 6 million, but now it's even more ridiculous at 12.5. So that was the ugly one.
Big fan of Oriel as well. I've got quite a large investment in there. And I did actually have communication with Tim Livesey after that RNS, which, as you know, was a bit of a shocker. And he actually ran a proactive interview after the RNS to try and kind of explain the situation with the I Am Gold investment. And there were three possible outcomes, basically, that can happen. First one is that they can agree to roll over the spend into year four. Okay. Second one is where Oriel will trigger a breach of the option agreement and I Am Gold have got 30 days to resolve, pay the outstanding underspend as cash. And the third one is that Oriel will trigger a breach of the option agreement and I Am Gold decide that they no longer wish to meet their commitments, which means they'll effectively just walk away from the deal. And all of the outcomes are positive for Oreo. Absolutely. There's no doubt about any of those because they get the cash. They get the obviously they get the breach and it's resolved. And then they get the final point where potentially I'm going to walk away and they get to retain, what is it, 70%, I believe, that they've pawned out to IAM Gold. So they'll effectively take the whole license or 70% of the license back. And then they can work with another partner in that. As you know, the region is extremely prolific for fines. You've got, as you say, IAM Gold, you've got Barrick, you've got a large number of other large mining companies in that region in Senegal. So I think it was something that the market missed. And I think that this gives people a real great opportunity to buy into one of the smallest market cap gold producers in the world, really, you know, in a well-endowed region.
The one for next week for me is Rambler. It's got to happen sooner or later. The overhang from the last placing has to finish sooner rather than later. It's been sitting there now in the 0.3s, 0.33, 0.34, 0.35 for a few weeks now. The churn has been happening. Fundamentally, this business is massively undervalued. If it gets back to producing its 1,350 tons per day of stuff at 2% copper and gold and silver involved, then the figures will work out that this company should have a profit of somewhere in the region of $30 to $40 million per year by the end of this year with no debt. And its current market cap is 30 million. So you do the maths.
It's a really good one. So with some of the code I've written, I found that I was looking at reversal margins, and what a reversal margin is what I call it anyway. But what it means is if a stock 10 bags going up, say if it does, it drops by 9%. The reversal margin is how many bags does it take to get back? So the reversal margin is a percentage to get back. And one of the top listed ones was RMM. And there's some really professional people investing that I know in RMM that say it's going to do really well. And like you say, there's no debt. The overhang, if you send me the figures of the placing values, I could probably calculate when it will wear off for you. But I think also there was clauses in the holders of the, because they did something, didn't they? They paid debt off with shares last year. So they had some debt, and what they did is they kind of placed some shares to pay that debt off. But then they gave a clause that they can't sell those shares for 3 months. So that's when you churn.
One of them came out last week that they could start to sell the shares.
Oh, right. Yeah. So, it was around this time when they could sell. So
there was a 100 million sale this week.
Yeah. Yeah,
and that particular loan was 220 million, I think. So at least half of it's gone, and maybe more, but we don't know because it might have been in smaller segments. But as soon as that passes, there should be nothing to hold it, really. It should go to 0.6, pretty without doubt. And then for me, at the end of the year with the profit and the figures, it's worth 3p. You know, from where it is now. But
yeah, I mean, I definitely see it easily see a bagger in it. She just on as soon as the overhang's clear. I mean, there was also a couple of large placings. There was a placing at 0.2, which I think they've churned through. That was about three, four months ago. And then there was another recent placing which caught the market completely off guard because they'd not long placed and there was rumor, you know, the usual thing comes through and on the chat groups, there's going to be an RMM placing and now we've raised. And this was after their RNS that said that they'd actually started forward selling the copper. And as we know, copper's hit an all time high recently. So it kind of surprises me that the SP of Rambler has not risen on the back of the increase in the value of the rising in the copper value. So Kevin's right. I think that from these 0.34, 0.35 levels, if you've got the patience to hold this for certainly through 2021, you could see quite a handsome return on your investment. You know, this isn't going to be a you know, quick flip of you know, quick flip. But you know, and it comes back to the point. You know, we looked at it this week with FAR. You know, we how many times have we seen it where we hold these stocks and they literally do nothing? And probably back to your favorite this week, Albert, the Futura FUM. You know, he sits there. A mate of mine said this week he held FUM for 3 years and actually sold yesterday, would you believe? And I'm not actually, you know, and Kevin can back that up. And he was like, I can't believe I actually got rid of that yesterday. I mean, Tony, another mate of mine, he held it for, he's had it 3 years. So he was like, you probably like yourself, extremely ecstatic to see it rise to, you know, pardon the pun, it rose today. And, you know, he's not looked back. So, yeah, very, very happy. But I keep saying to people, don't hold a stock that Warren Buffett comes, you know, never buy a stock you're not willing to hold for 10 years. So you can never, ever, never, ever cry about the fact that you sold out and it's risen. Because
it's the fundamental rules. And I mean, if you watch it, go on Netflix tonight, sorry, Amazon tonight, by becoming Warren Buffett. He's the most down-to-earth man. I thought he was Satan when I first heard about it. He's the most down-to-earth man, and he's got five simple, the best way to make money on the stock market is a simple principle. For me, small cap, it's got a contract. Is the contract bigger than the cap? Oh, I'll buy it, you know? You don't have to go to town. I mean, you need to look under the hood, who's holding it, is it Kansas, is it, you know?
Yeah.
But there's this simple thing. I mean, I think RMM potentially in the future will be like an EUA. With substance. For me, it was a sip. I'll buy that, stick it in the sip. You can't be watching that intraday. I mean, there's a lot of traders in it. It moves quick, which is great. But I mean, like you say, when the churn's gone, the placing's gone, it's a solid company. I've looked at videos of the stuff they've got. You know, it's a big deal. But I mean,
and I think
you've got people out there that will go and buy a company for a trade. And you're like, you're trading a potential unicorn. Buy it, forget about it. You know, look at the other stuff intraday. Is I've been finding stuff that have dipped, right? That's gone down. So MHC, for example, my health checked. What I did with that, you know how I found that? I looked at every RNS that had come out that had the word approval in it and scrolled up. And I was going off the cap. How big is the cap? And I came and I saw, and it said, government approved. That's the first thing. I wasn't looking for test kits. I wasn't looking for anything. Government approved. And I clicked on it. Government approved for what? Test for release. I was like, test for release? What's this? And then you think what's coming in the world for the testing and the flying, and we've spoken about MHC.
Yeah.
But then I look at the bot, and what I've been doing is finding things the market's missed with a solid bot. Because sometimes you can tell, I mean, look at Penny. We probably own as many shares as Penny in the company. It doesn't care about the markets. It cares about the product and the company. And, I mean, Adam Reynolds is in it. He holds large positions. So that's what I've been doing. Going back in time and finding things the market have missed because it wasn't hot that day. Some days you get loads of hot RNSs and good ones on the back burners get missed. But you know, if you go back to them, the prices crashed down. They're funded. I mean, MHC recently funded. What was interesting is Bask. They actually went into your favourite exchange at the minute, the Aquis, and Berry Investments. You look under the hood. I mean, you've got Conacord investing in them, and they're taking positions in two. I don't know if anyone's noticed. They've been loading two. I've got my eye all over it. It's not warrants or options. It's they're buying two. Yeah. Why are they buying two? I don't know. But I want to know. But anyway, what was interesting about MHC, when you go under the hood, not only that, the brokers and everything involved, they did the book build accelerated. And then they got discretionary clients to take the placing, and certain bits of the placing was under EIS. I've got the Paul Roger here, by the way.
Nice.
But then the book build, and I love it when you just find someone on the market that like people wouldn't notice it.
Yeah.
EIS agreement And then all of a sudden, when they're placing shares land, there's no R&S until the second day of allotment. And do you know what that meant? It meant that I knew exactly how many shares they took outside of EIS. And you know why that is? That was because they were already at 2% before they went over 3%. So that meant 1% before they went over 3%. What that meant is I could calculate how tightly held the Berian investments were in the company. And the board of MHC are absolutely solid. And they're so, I've met them at a conference a long time ago. They were at something, they weren't, it was, you know, and they're in groups, they've got things in the pies at Amazon. And it, I just feel like something's coming. And when you look how lucrative it is, right, 28K revenue, that's what they got. That's what they did last year. If they sold 10 test kits every single day, 365 days a year, they would 1,100% on that revenue. And that's 10 kits through one product. And stuff like that to me is, that's when you start thinking numbers. And you start thinking, nobody knows about it. When I bought that, no one was 1.7p, less than the price. You know, so I've gone into this, it's like reverse trading. Because rather than be reactive to news, it's a proactive going back in time and fine.
We've had MHC, we've had NSCI, we've had Life. Kevin, have we got a fake? We've had Rambler from RMM is Kev's real, you know, we've had obviously RMM. We've also had ORR, which is massively, you know, we all agree that that's, you know, been sold down the road. And we think that, you know, there's real potential on the I Am Gold resolution, let's say, and obviously news from Cameroon. And obviously we're still waiting the actual Sonala, the Faroe Prospect drill results. So there's a lot of news to come on that. I'm going to go with CBD, the last one. Again, Aquis Exchange. Sorry, bit of a slag for that at the moment. But basically, it's a company called Block Commodities, BLCC. And they have a market cap. Well, they had a market cap of just under 1 million, but they've gone up about 120%. So they're probably around the 2 million mark now. They had news this week that they'd got an option agreement on a CBD license in Zimbabwe. So a lot of people probably red flagged on Zimbabwe, you know, Mugabe running things or whatever it is over there. But actually, you know, with the valuation we've seen of some of these small starter CBD companies, I think that this one has got some potential that, you know, could, it's a 0.03 mark at the moment. I'm looking for 0.1 pence as an exit price. So I'm going to give you a target on that. But that's the one that I've got my eye on at the moment and just taking a position this week. So I think that it's got legs. Again, it's down to the liquidity of the thing. Is unfortunately it's a telephone order buy at the moment and sell. So that's obviously going to put a considerable number. I'm trading through Hargreaves Lansdowne for that particular one, and I believe that even with II Interactive, you still need to make that phone call. And again, and the mad thing is the floats around. I think 25% are not in public hands, so it should still technically be around the 60-70% mark, but they just make it so difficult to trade on electronic access. So hopefully this is something that we touched on earlier, that, you know, with IG and companies like that actually, brokers actually allowing it, then, you know, it may improve the liquidity of the stock and therefore allow, I mean, we saw it with Life at the beginning of March, they weren't allowing any electronic orders to be processed, whether that be kill or fill or a limit order. But now, since so many people were ringing them and they were doing so many telephone trades, they've quickly added it to the electronic access, so you can actually trade online. But
there's a company called Computershare, and I use them.
Yeah,
and they're not a broker, but they use a broker in the background, and you can trade things through them that you can't trade through the broker. It's really weird. So, I mean, coin I can trade. And
I think that as they get more, there's two aspects to the Aquis exchange, and not a lot of people understand it, but it's all a growth market, but you've got the access part of the exchange, which is for companies under sort of 50 million market cap, 15, 20. And then you've got the Apex part of the Aquis exchange, which is for your more well-established companies. So you've got Market cap 25 million, free float of 25% minimum. And then what that they also guarantee is you move from a lot of these smaller stocks like Block and Life, who are on the access, they only have access to one market maker. Now, when you only have, as you know, when you only have access to one market maker, you don't have a market effectively, because you need market makers to compete with each other to create that market. So what the guarantee is, they reduce you reduce the spread of the stock because there's more market makers. And I think the guideline is that there's a promise, a price, some sort of, it's almost like a price promise, that they reduce the spread to within 5 or 6%. So, you know, they really tighten the spread down. And obviously that, again, encourages buys and sells, because the fact that, you know, you're not buying something that's got a 15, 20% spread like we see on some of these very illiquid stocks. So, you know, and there's also a corporate governance requirement as well in there, so that you know that the company has to, and it's not a corporate governance in the form of MAR regulation. This is not something like they have to have on AIM or on the main market. This is an AQUIS governance code that they must fulfill. So, you know, there'll be previous years revenues or reports, financial reports for that previous year. So companies obviously got to have been established for a year. So, you know, those factors I mentioned mean that a company is more mature, and then they've moved to that sort of more established part of the
What we need to do, I've realized what we need to do. We need to get a platform that can trade all of this and whack it in a SPAC on the LSE.
That's a good show.
Imagine that. Get a company, create a company and put that in a SPAC on the LSE that allows you to trade all of this stuff.
Yeah.
You just need an app. I could write an app that could do that.
Well, I'll back you. I'll put some funds in, mate.
Kind of thing would take a year to write.
Of course it would. Yeah, but I mean, you know what, mate? I'd rather have it take a year and then be able to do it in a year, or even 18 months or 2 years. The fact is that until this gets fixed, and as I say, I spoke to Alistair Haynes at the, you know, who runs his company AQUIS, and he was blaming it on the brokers. You know, you've got to get onto Halifax, you've got to get onto Hargreaves and tell them to put it to electronic order. And to be fair, I did. And Life became, few of the stocks suddenly became tradable on the app, which is fine. But still, it's not a way to trade. You're not getting a live price. You're not getting that. Do you want to fulfill 100,000 shares at 0.62? No. You ring that when you put the order in and it says current net spread, yada, yada. You know, and you put in 5p or something, it says this is 5% below the current order, bid or whatever. And you're like, man, you know, I'm going to take a flight. And it's hit and miss. You know, it's like, I'll put the order in, 20 minutes later, it's rejected. It's that bad. It's not, you can't trade like that.
You need the market makers to sign up to it all, don't you? That's key, getting that sorted.
Yeah.
And then if you get that sorted, I mean, there's already APIs, which is like the way you trade it. You call the API and you simply...
Well, isn't it based on RSP? Isn't it effectively, you have a retail service provider, effectively what that is, you know, along those lines. So when you have level, as you know, you've got level two software, you've got your bid and your ask, you've got your book, you've got your market makers on your ask, you've got your market makers on your bid. Now, that software is not telling until you get a quote with an RSP live quote. What that does is it tells you whether you've got Wins or CFEP or Stifel on the book, right? So if it says, say for instance, I want to buy 100,000 SIMI shares, and it tells me that Wins are on the book with an EMS of 100,000 at 0.7, right? And I go, right, give me a quote on that. Give me an RSP. I get an RSP live return back, and it tells me that Wins ain't even on the book at 0.7. They're at 0.9, and Stifel are on the book at 0.7 with only 10,000 shares left. So I know that the market and the book is going to flip, because Wins are nowhere to be seen. They're saying they are on the as a transparency thing. And that's why that's how you can see. When you look at level two in conjunction with RSP, that is the only way you can see whether a share is going to change and it's going to flip and they're going to run out of stock.
Yeah.
What do you think of that, Zach? I hope you've gone a bit quiet. Is this helpful?
No, it's very helpful. I've never learned so much in my life. This is great stuff. I think the whole thing is it makes me tear my hair out, what's left of my hair. You know, it shouldn't be that you've got to like get badgered the service providers. They should be doing it themselves. I mean, we're not in 1997 now. It's very 1990s, you know, at the moment. I think what will happen, though, is just because, you know, you'll have enough big companies on Aquis for it eventually. So, you know, once you have about 5 KR1s and, you know, 25 Coinciliums, then all the electronic stuff, it just has to be worthwhile financially. That's all. I mean, at the moment, you know, it's only happened a lot, basically since the start of the year. Before that, I mean, you know, anybody making an effort was sort of wasting their time. So,
as Zach says, until we get these teething problems out of the way and start getting actual live prices and being able to trade it on an app at the press of a button, you're never going to replace AIM
it's clear it's going to work from demand from the public and demand from market makers rather than the exchange doing anything about it. So it's just that's the way it's going to work. And that's probably the way
The tech is there. And I know the tech's there because I quoted buying coin today and I got a quote. So the live feed is there. Through the computer, I can do that. I can buy coin, which is on that market, through ComputerShare. And ComputerShare is a middleman. Once you've put the order in, they pick a phone up and do something, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if the tech's there and you've got an actual broker that can give you a live quote, then, you know, the RSP set up and you've got that... Because that's all it is. That means that there's an RSP. And I think that's what they're missing. You know, whether certain brokers need to get that direct line in with it. All it is a direct line into the market makers. Yeah. Because, as you say, at the moment, they're having to pick the broker I'm using is picking up the phone on my behalf and then submitting it. Now, all I'm doing by using the app at the moment is I'm saying, here's my order. They're going to ring that through then for me. All you're doing is saying I'm lazy enough to know I don't want to pick up the phone. Here's a text message.
So
it's purely just what I'm willing to pay. If you want to fill it, kill or fill basically. And that's that's not how you trade. You know, not again, we're not trading, we're investing. We're holding. But the point is, it looked out on me this week with Forbes because I've got in at 0.685 and I built a position and I saw it hit 2.6 or 2.8 and I thought I'm going to just take a bit off the table. And by the time I got through, it peaked and I said, put an order in at 2.3. And he goes, okay, be back with you in a minute. He went off 30 seconds later. He goes, I've filled it and it's at 2.53. And I'm like, you betted it by quite a significant amount, you know, and you got me 7.5-8 grand back on that trade. And I've still got a significant position, but it worked. It actually worked. It worked in my favor. And I actually called it. If I looked at all the trades, I actually got out right at the top. And I never thought, and then people were going, no. A guy who I knew, Dean, he was getting out after me. And 10 minutes later, he was out at 1.9. So that was how much it dropped back in that time. Yeah. Sometimes you call it and you get out of the top. It's very rare you actually get out at the top of that day's round. So a lot of luck involved.
We've done our bit. Yeah. Thank you to Kevin. Thank you to Phil. Thank you to Albert. We'll see you next time on...
See you later.
Cheers,
thank
guys.
You, everybody.
Thank you for listening. Remember to visit our website for more news and other podcasts at www.share-talk.com.